We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Live from the Edmore Sawgrass Cadillac Studios, Morse has more. Visit EdmoreSawgrass.com. This is the Alex Dono Show on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
Yes!
Oh, it is.
It is.
The 9 o'clock hour, my friends, of the Alex Dono Show here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. With you till 10 o'clock here tonight. Streaming on the internet, WQAM.com, on your smartphone, TuneIn Radio app, Radio.com app, however you listen, we appreciate you. It was good talking to Doug Plagans in the previous segment. He was co-emceeing the Panthers Summer Summit. And I mentioned that that Hawk was on the air this afternoon from out there. I actually thought a couple things were cool on Hawk's show. Yeah, he had Randy Moeller sit in with him for the first hour, and whether you like hockey or not, you have to admit, Red Deer Randy Moeller is always radio gold. You just want to sit and chat with that guy for hours. And then in the 3 o'clock hour, I think it was 2 o'clock hour, Moeller was with him. 3 o'clock hour, he had the throwback partner, Zach Krantz, because Crowder was out of town today. So Zach, who's, you know, a few weeks back moved back to mornings, was on with Hawk for an hour today. I thought it was cool hearing them together. But one of the segments they did together was they interviewed the Florida Panthers CEO, Matt Caldwell. And I have to play back a few clips from that because I love this Panthers front office's approach to the fan base and the way they are willing to admit mistakes and be accountable. I think that's very important because I know that there are people who follow me on Twitter and tweet to me all the time who were very critical of some of the decisions made last year with the coaching situation and the role of Dale Tallon. You had issues with the way those things were handled. And I think that the good news here is not only do the Panthers front office members, Mr. Viola, Mr. Sifu, then the next guy in command is Matt Caldwell, the CEO. Not only do they listen to you, not only do they reach out to the fan base and get your feedback, but they also even admit when they do things wrong. And that, to me, is just the opposite of what Marlins fans are used to. And I know it always comes back to that. And we'll have, by the way, a Marlins sale update in a few minutes. But I like the fact that unlike Marlins management, who don't seem to care what we think or what you think, the Panthers management, the Panthers front office, they are willing to evolve. Like, I really appreciate that. So here is a few bites from Matt Caldwell. If you missed this interview, I think it's worth listening to the entire thing, but I thought that these are really some of the highlights here. Panthers CEO Matt Caldwell on how important it is interacting with the fans and listening to them.
But it really stems from Vinny and Doug, our owners. They really care. This is not some hobby. This is not some investment for them. They want to bring their Stanley Cup to South Florida, and they love their fans. And, you know, I think the franchise is in a much better place than it was 3 years ago when they bought the team. We've made plenty of mistakes that I think we've corrected. But the one thing I think people can agree on is that we really, really care. And like you said, we're approachable, and we love our people. And, you know, when Vinny and Doug are here, they walk the concourse and talk to fans. And every game I'm out there, you know, going to every single club and suite and concourse and checking in on fans that, you know, in the lower bowl and upper bowl. And so it's just part of our nature.
And that's not just lip service. He's not blowing smoke. I've seen these gentlemen do that. Like I have seen Caldwell and Mr. Viola and Mr. Sifu actually roaming the stands and talking to fans. Like, he's not making that up. That really happens. And here's something I thought that was cool. You know, Caldwell shared a story about calling and interacting with a disgruntled fan.
There's a guy, Phil Gallo, who I've actually become like great friends with, who said something about Vinny over social, and I said, you know, why don't we talk about it? And he sent me a direct message, and I happened to have my phone open when the direct message came through. So I, you know, when like a phone number comes up, it's like blue.
Yeah.
So I just pressed it right away. So I might have called him in like less than 10 seconds.
Wow,
from
that's
his like direct
kind of creepy. Actually.
Yeah.
Is it like?
It was like, what is the CEO doing? You know.
But I kind of feel like, you know, especially with your voice and your attitude, like, are you asking someone to step outside?
I might have said we could talk about this like real men, but maybe. But when he got on the phone, he was like, "Hello," and I was like, "Hey, it's Matt Caldy." He goes, "Are you, you know," he said a curse word, but he said, "Are you kidding me?" You know, I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "I can't believe the president of the team's calling me." But, and I'm not saying this to brag or anything, we really care. And we have this motto, one fan at a time. And whether you're sitting in $12 seats upstairs or you're on the glass, everybody matters to us. And I wanted to hear him out and explain where we come from things. And we've actually become really good friends.
I think that's cool, and I don't know the name of the guy he mentioned, Phil Gallo. I don't know that gentleman, but I do know somebody else, another Panther fan, a season ticket holder, who has told me something similar, that, you know, that he has complained on social media about ownership and that he got a phone call from Matt Caldwell and they talked it out. So this Phil Gallo, who became friends with, is not the only person that he's done that with, that he has personally called fans to talk things out. I think that's really cool, and I get you can't do that with everybody, but you know, you can do that in certain situations. I think it's a great thing for the front office to do. And here, like this cut, I thought was my biggest takeaway from listening to that interview today. Because again, I appreciate accountability. Accountability, that's the one of the main reasons why I'm a big fan of Adam Gase, head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Why I am a big fan of Manny Diaz, Miami Hurricanes defensive coordinator. You know, Mark Richt, I think to an extent, only because he doesn't speak quite as candidly as a Diaz or an Adam Gase does. But I appreciate when coaches, front office members are willing to admit when they did something that wasn't right or wasn't perfect, and they're learning and evolving from it. Because you don't always get that, right? You never got that from, you know, an asshat like Joe Philbin, just so oblivious but never admitted to doing anything wrong. You never get that from Marlins ownership. They can do no wrong in their own eyes. I really appreciated this today, saying that, you know, Matt Caldwell establishing that Dale Tallon is now fully in charge again of hockey operations.
One thing we've been preaching a lot is just stability. You know, we came in hot, you know, talking about like energy, and Vinny is just a no-nonsense, wants-to-win kind of guy. I think you can tell from his background. And, you know, we brought in all new staff, we brought in new players, we locked up all of our youth, we went out and got free agents. If anything, we like tried a little bit too hard sometimes and were maybe a little trigger happy last year, but we're correcting some things. But now, you know, we got Dale. It's very, very clear that Dale's in charge. That was very murky last year, and so we introduced too many voices to the front office, and so Dale is in complete control of hockey operations and has final say in all hockey. I run the business side. That's always been the case. Me and him have a great, great relationship. So it's, I think we've streamlined our chain of command.
So just hearing that is beautiful. It was murky last year with what Dale's role was, and we introduced too many voices. Just hearing him say that to me is refreshing, right? And the fact that they are doing something about it, that he assured fans that now Dale Tallon is fully in charge of hockey operations. Caldwell, who you heard from, is fully in charge of business operations. They don't have too many cooks in the kitchen like they did last year, because that was the most common fan complaint. I mean, the comments that I would get and hear on social media when I talk to fans in person, the most common thing was saying, oh, what exactly is Dale doing now? Why isn't Dale fully in charge? Why are there so many other voices in the mix? Why isn't Dale the guy running the show? Why doesn't the buck stop with Dale? You know, that was murky last year, like Caldwell said, and they now have remedied that situation. I think that's very important. I think that that needs to be your one voice in hockey operations. And the fact that a high-ranking front office member can admit and be accountable for making that mistake last year, I think is a beautiful thing, because you don't always get that. So let me shift gears now and give you an update on Marlins ownership. Barry Jackson posted this short while ago. Miami Marlins near sale decision. Oh, just that's music to my ears. Even hearing that. Miami Marlins near sale decision with bids short of initial asking price. Color me surprised, not. None of the three groups bidding, Barry writes, to buy the Marlins has shown a willingness to meet the $1.3 billion asking price in revised offers. And the Marlins are now prepared to sell the team for something less. Oh, thank the Lord. Thank the baseball gods. potentially in the $1.2 billion range, according to a New York-based Major League Baseball source that is briefed, that has been briefed on the situation. And I, let me point something out here real quick, because when you see this number on paper and it's just Monopoly money to you, because it's not your money, fantasy money to you. I mean, obviously it's real money to whoever's buying the team. But the most common thing that I'm seeing now is, oh, what a joke. So they're not going to get $1.3 billion, but they may get $1.2 billion. You look at that like it's the same thing. You do realize that the difference between $1.3 billion and $1.2 billion is $100 million. That may not look like a lot of money in the context of reading it in Barry Jackson's blog, but that is a difference, people. $100 million is a lot of money. If that's the difference here, if they may make $1.2 billion, which, by the way, if that's what they get for the team, that's still more than the Marlins are worth. You know, when you sell a sports franchise, it's never an exact science, right? Forbes might tell you that, oh, the Marlins, they're worth about $780 million. But when you've got a commodity, there are only 30 Major League Baseball teams available. Very rare that one actually comes up for sale. You know, you saw the Clippers a few years back sell for $2 billion when they were valued under $1 billion. Like, sports teams get inflated. But, yeah, I mean, I'm glad to see this, that they are now prepared to sell the team for less than $1.3 billion, maybe something in the neighborhood of $1.2 billion. Please bring it on. Jackson writes, the Marlins are seriously considering interest from three bidders, New York and Palm Beach-based Wayne Rothbaum and Massachusetts-based Tag Romney. That's one group. Former New York Yankee star Derek Jeter and Miami businessman Jorge Mas. I think Mas is going to end up winning this. You know, because Jeter, to me, his dream ended when Jeb left the group. He's a fish out of water now. Just doesn't have the cash. And I know that Jeb didn't have a whole lot of money either, but they combined forces. I think more investors were behind the group when they were both in it together. I think Jeter is really struggling now to raise the money necessary. And it's too bad for him, because all indications are that that's who the commissioner favored buying the team, that they want Derek Jeter to be involved in an ownership group. They think that would be a good thing for Major League Baseball, to make him an ambassador to the game by being the control man in a group owning a team. I think baseball wants that, but at the end of the day, it's Jeffrey Loria's decision who to sell to. And if Jeter just doesn't have the money and he's going to borrow too much money to buy the team, you know, I think the actual billionaire here, Jorge Mas, is going to end up being the one completing this purchase. But you know what? I understand Wayne Rothbaum is pretty well off also. So maybe Rothbaum and Romney have a chance, but it seems like Jorge Mas financially is better off than the rest of these people. And I think that's what it's going to come down to. The guy who actually has billions with a B and doesn't need to borrow money and go into debt the way that these others might. I think all signs are pointing to Mas, especially with the price coming down, because I know he wasn't willing to pay $1.3 billion. Maybe if you can get it below 1.2, he'd be in.
Speaking from absolute ignorance here, Dono, about purchasing teams and money in general, I know nothing about money or financial situations.
Nor do I, really, but go ahead.
You're saying that Jorge Mas is probably the lead guy here. He's obviously the wealthiest of the three people or three groups who are in line here to try to buy the Marlins. Why not? And of course, Jorge Mas would have to agree to this, but is there any possibility that maybe Jeter would be able to say, okay, I don't have enough money to do this, right, on my own. I can't borrow enough money, and it's just not going to work out that way. Maybe Jorge Mas will agree to do something here. The MLB wants Jeter involved. Jorge Mas has the money. Maybe he's the kind of guy who's saying, hey, Jeter knows his baseball bleep. Maybe he can tag along here and we can make something happen. Is that even possible?
I do remember seeing that and hearing that Mas is open to that. I don't know if Jeter is. That's the thing, because Jeter, and maybe now that he sees his window is closing and this is like his tombstone is being written out right now in this deal. But Jeter did not want to tag along with somebody else's group. He wanted to be the control guy. And Mas, if he's the one putting up 90% of the cash and Jeter just swoops in with a couple of extra bucks, that he wouldn't really be the control guy. So I think this is more about what Jeter wants than what Mas wants. Because honestly, if I'm Jorge Mas, and I would love to have somebody like Jeter as, you know, the guy who's running the baseball operations, contributing as a minority owner with a minority stake in my group. I hope that happens. I think that would be like having your cake and eating it too for Marlins fans, because you would have your majority owner would be somebody who actually has the money to cut fat checks and field a competitive team in Mas. And then you've got a minority owner who's one of the faces of Major League Baseball in Derek Jeter, who can make the Marlins look really good, having a guy like Jeter backing you, and could probably help in signing free agents. And it would make your team, it would so overhaul the image of your team, right? If you can trade out Jeffrey Loria and his paintings and David Sampson and his nonsense, get those guys out of here in exchange for Jorge Mas and his billions of dollars and Derek Jeter, his persona, I think that would be a breath of fresh air. So I would love to see that happen. I think that's up to Jeter if he's willing to do that. If Jeter now sees the writing is on the wall that I just, me leading this group, we don't have the funds. We can't compete dollar for dollar with Mas. If I can't beat him, join him. I don't know if he's willing to do that. You know, that's the reason why Jeb left that group, because Jeb wanted to be the control guy and Jeter wanted to be the control guy. The other investors wanted Jeter to be the control guy. So Jeb said, peace, I'm out. So I don't know if Jeter would be willing to be the number two, the guy riding shotgun to somebody else, but I would love that. And I wanted to get to something else here heading into free agency. Tomorrow night, guys, it starts. You know, assuming you're not such a square that you don't go to sleep before midnight. I'm going to be up, I would say, honestly, I did this last year. I'm going to be up until at least 3:30, 4 in the morning, Friday night. Try to get as many free agent updates as possible. And with my luck, I'm going to go to sleep like a half hour before Gordon Hayward says he's signing in Miami. Like that's my luck. I'll go to sleep right before that happens. But, you know, with Gordon Hayward, you got to wonder if, you know, having the first meeting is a good thing or a bad thing. I was just reading a blog from Manny Navarro in the Miami Herald. He seems to think it's a good thing to get in front of him first. Ira Winderman touched on that a little bit today. He was on the Hockman and Crowder show, sans Crowder, today. And Ira, I thought, had a really interesting take on it as to where Miami stands compared to Boston and Utah.
I think Boston is going to get their choice of prime free agents by telling those free agents, hey, we're going to get Paul George, which I think is a very good chance it happens, and then selling the prime free agents. And so I think basically what teams like the Heat and other teams are going to do is wind up chasing the leftover of Gordon Hayward and Blake Griffin. And the way that they set the Gordon Hayward people set up their interviews is fascinating. The Heat will go in first on Saturday. They'll pitch what they have because basically that's all they have to pitch. Then the Celtics are going to go in on Sunday. And the thought is by then, come to the table, Danny Ainge, and show us your map or even that you already have Paul George. If you do, it will lead us inclined to go in that direction. Then the Utah Jazz meet with Hayward on Monday. And his mandate to them has been, one, re-sign George Hill, two, add one more free agent to make it more palatable to come back. So a lot of people are saying, oh, the Heat's going first, they're in the driver's seat. Well, no, the Heat are going first because they can't bring that second player in. They can't get another sort of whale to go with Hayward. So I think the Heat are just going to have to sell what they have. Hayward and James Johnson have the same agent. So I think the package deal with the Heat will be James Johnson and Hayward. The package deal with the Celtics will be Paul George and Hayward. The package deal with the Jazz will be George Hill re-signed, one more free agent and Hayward. Then Hayward gets to decide.
I thought that was great stuff from Ira Winderman from the Sun Sentinel. So here's my take building off of that. I don't think Utah really has a chance. I think you take them out of the running. He's giving Utah a meeting. He's giving them the last meeting. It's a courtesy, right? To say, oh, you know what? This franchise has been good to me. You've done right by me. You can't offer me the most money, so it's worth at least hearing you out. So I'm going to give you guys the final meeting, right? We're going to close up shop with you as a courtesy, because it's an insult, the franchise you've already played for, to not even give them a meeting. It's an insult, so Hayward is doing right by them. But you know, Utah, they're not going to be relevant, especially not in the Western Conference. He's got to get out of there. He's got to go to the East. I think that's what Hayward is going to look at. So then it's going to come down to Miami and Boston. And like Ira said, you know, Boston has the upper hand with the flexibility, because they've got pieces, trade chips that the Heat cannot compete with to make really Paul George that trade a reality with all the draft picks, commodities that they have to be able to trade for Paul George and sign Gordon Hayward. And I think that is the number one thing. You know, you can talk about the Brad Stevens connection. I don't know if that means as much. I think the number one thing here is that flexibility that Boston has the potential of enticing him with a Paul George deal. So, like Ira said, Heat get the first meeting because there's really nothing in flux there, right? You either sign me or you don't. I'm not waiting on Paul George or anything like that. You show me what you have. Put your chips on the table. I'll decide. I'll see how I feel. And then he's going to show up to that Boston meeting waiting to hear what Danny Ainge has to say about Paul George. Where are we with that? Do you have a deal in place, right? Am I the last domino? Have you agreed with Indiana that Indiana Pacers were willing to send you X, Y, and Z for Paul George? We've got a deal on the table. We're just waiting on Gordon Hayward. As soon as he signs on the dotted line, all systems go. George is coming here. Hayward is coming here. That's what Gordon's going to be looking for. Him and his agent, when they sit down with Danny Ainge, they're going to ask him, all right, so if we sign on the dotted line today, Am I playing with Paul George? Is he here? Is he the next guy through door number one? And if they don't have a good answer for him, I think that keeps Miami alive, right? Pat Riley on Saturday. Riley, he needs to blow Gordon Hayward away. Wow, if you take what I just said out of context, it sounds terrible. Pat Riley needs to impress Gordon Hayward and his agent. Display the Heat culture. Remind them what they can do with a really promising supporting cast around him, how good this city and this team could be to him. Put all your chips on the table, impress him. He's going to leave that meeting with an open mind, right? Like, hey, Miami's a really good option if Boston can't wow me with this Paul George scenario. And then he shows up on Saturday or Sunday to that meeting with the Celtics, and if they can't give him concrete proof that Paul George is on the way, then I think that makes it very realistic. He can say, you know what? Not sure. Even though I played for Brad Stevens before, I don't know if I look at him and that culture the same way I would look at what Pat Riley and Spoelstra are doing down in Florida. I think if they can't give him a good answer, a good scenario, a good feel on the Paul George pieces, the Paul George trade, I think Gordon Hayward could go back and say, you know what, Miami could be my spot. And then he goes through the Utah meeting on Tuesday, just or Monday, just as a courtesy to them. And after that meeting is over, he announces either he's taking his talents to South Beach or he's taking his talents to Massachusetts. I think the Heat have a shot. I think it comes down between Miami and Boston, Utah. I think he's just taking that meeting to be polite. And I think this Paul George scenario is going to have a lot to do with where he ends up. Let me take one call because we're talking soccer on the other side. Let me talk to Mike here on WQAM. What's up, Mike?
Donald, great big show like always, man. Great show.
Oh, thanks, dude. I appreciate that.
You know, Donald, what I don't understand, let's talk about Boston real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say they get Gordon Hayward, and they got three small forwards. They just drafted the last 2 years a top three pick.
Right.
Now you're going to get Gordon Hayward, that's going to be number four. Now you don't have a power forward, okay? And you're going to get, let's say you package first-round picks, one of your draft picks a few years ago, this year, last year, whatever, and you get Paul George. Let's say you don't win it, which they're not going to beat Golden State. They're not going to mesh together in 1 year to beat Golden State.
Right.
Okay? Now you got Paul George, free agent. Avery Bradley, free agent. Isaiah Thomas, free agent. I think Gordon Hayward needs to use his head a little bit and realize, yes, could they possibly get Paul George? But down the road, this might be a problem because all these guys are going to want to get paid. Isaiah Thomas put up MVP numbers this year. Avery Bradley, Paul George, I want to go to LA. So I think Gordon Hayward's going to have to sit back and say, okay, we might be great this year. We might go to the finals. But next year, I don't think Boston's going to keep all these guys.
That's a great point. It's a great point you bring up, especially just in terms of Paul George. Because, I mean, like, people are expecting, oh, no matter where he goes, no matter where he gets traded, he's just going to go to Los Angeles anyway. So, you know what? There's going to be a lot of smoke and mirrors in that meeting when Danny Ainge, who Pat Riley once said, didn't Pat Riley once use the F word to Danny Ainge? Danny Ainge, there's going to be a lot of smoke and mirrors when he sits down with Gordon Hayward, because he's going to not only try and convince him, yeah, we've got this Paul George deal locked up, but oh, he wants to be here. He wants to be here long term. We're going to lock him in. He's going to love it in Boston. Chowda, lobster. What's not to love about Boston? How about the crappy cold weather? Share a city with Tom Brady. Although we found out yesterday, Solana, you uncovered that Gordon Hayward is not a Tom Brady fan. Can we find out how he feels about Ryan Tannehill? Can Hayward weigh in on that? I even got a text earlier. You know, I started off in the 6 o'clock hour. I made a serious offer, dead serious on this. You might have thought I was being facetious. I don't even know how to. I don't even know what that word means. I just think it makes me sound smart. But I made a serious offer in the 6 o'clock hour because you heard some knucklehead, Adam Kaufman, from CBS Boston, say that, oh, you know, I'm hearing it. Miami just wouldn't be a good fit with Gordon Hayward because he's not a party animal. He doesn't like to go out. How could he play in Miami? Because, you know, everybody in Miami, all we do is drink and do cocaine. That's all we do down here. But I made a sincere offer. If Gordon Hayward, if it's true that he's a homebody, doesn't like to go out, doesn't like to party, be friends with me. I will be your lifestyle coach. I will be your lifestyle consigliere. I will show you how to live in South Florida without having any fun whatsoever. If that's the life you want to live, Gordon, he's a married guy, family man. I'm a married guy. I can show you how to do absolutely nothing, get in absolutely zero trouble. I'm an expert at that. I've lived in this city all my life. It's been a decade since I've been out past 1:30 in the morning. I've never done cocaine. I've never even seen cocaine. I don't go out to South Beach unless there's an emergency, right? Like if I had like a dying relative who happened to be over there, I might cross that bridge. I don't go out there for anything. And I live here. I can show Gordon Hayward how to take the Salt Lake City lifestyle to South Florida because I might as well live in Utah. I've been there. There's not a whole lot going on. Beautiful mountain skiing, great. But lifestyle, not a whole lot going on. I think they've changed this law since I was last there because my sister lived out there for a couple of years for a job. So I've been out to Salt Lake City, but it's been a good 10 or so years since I've been out there. They used to have this law where you couldn't drink at like a restaurant or a bar unless you had a membership. Like you can't just like show up to the Olive Garden and order a sangria. Like you have to have like a membership to drink it because they're very strict with that in Utah. And in Utah, I think this is still in effect there. I think they may have changed the membership thing. But in Utah, the beer and wine that you buy in grocery stores has half the alcohol. Sneaky bastards. If you buy like a normal beer that you buy in any other state, Florida, wherever, usually around like 5% to 5.5% alcohol by volume. You go to a grocery store in Utah and you buy a beer, 2.5% alcohol. That means if you do the math, you got to drink twice as many beers to get the same buzz. That is no bueno. That's how they do things in Utah. So if that's the way Gordon Hayward wants to live, by all means, my friend, we can find you some weak beers in Florida. We can find you. We'll hook you up with a Netflix account. You never even have to leave the house to have fun. If that's the way you want to live, I can help. We'll talk some soccer next year on WQAM.
The world's game plays here. Every night, it's time for your nightly football fix on the Alex Dono Show.
Oh, man, here we go. This upsets me. This story courtesy of the Miami Herald. There's going to be a Real Madrid-themed restaurant in Miami. We can't find a better use of resources and food than that. And I have no problem with the soccer angle of it, right? Open up a great soccer-themed restaurant. Celebrate every team, right? Open up a place that celebrates Barcelona and Real Madrid and Manchester United and Juventus and Inter Milan and AC Milan. Like, open up an all-inclusive soccer restaurant. But since, you know, this city and, well, most cities, to be honest, I'm not going to pin this on South Florida. This has become a worldwide epidemic. This earth that we live on, like, I feel like I'm just ready to give up and colonize Mars or something, because this earth that we live on is infested with bandwagon Real Madrid fans. It's a huge worldwide epidemic. This is worse than Zika. It's worse than world hunger. Bunch of people who have, you know, they've been Real Madrid fans for life, like since 2011. Lifelong fans. Now we've got to have a themed restaurant. Here are some of the deets. The 12,000-square-foot, two-story restaurant will be located at the Met Square Tower. Kickoff is, I think that means opening, but kickoff is scheduled for early 2018. Real Madrid Cafe will feature a bar, a merchandise store, and a VIP lounge. In unrelated news, I hear Manny Chang has already submitted his resume to work at the Real Madrid Cafe. He's going to love this. Oh, in fact, he's where we found the story. Solana, you saw this retweeted by Manny. The 43-story Met Tower is the final piece of the ongoing Metropolitan Miami $1 billion project by MDM Development Group. So it's going to be a beautiful building. The Real Madrid Cafe chain. Oh, so there's more of these. Great. The Real Madrid Cafe chain launched its first restaurant outside of Spain in Dubai in 2014. So it makes sense to have them all over Spain. Like I understand that. But, man, to launch worldwide. You know, I hear that at the Real Madrid Cafe, in honor of Cristiano Ronaldo, you pay no taxes on your check. You evade those taxes all day long in honor of Ronaldo. I would love to see him show up to the restaurant. Lock him up. Lock him up. Listen, I'm all about celebrating soccer in this country, but to open up this bandwagon Real Madrid Cafe, I'm not going to go there unless the food is amazing. If I can get some great paella out there, I might decide to stop by, but I don't plan on going there. In other soccer news, I love this. I try to tell people European soccer is superior to everything else. Confederations Cup. Germany blasted Mexico 4-1. Mexico had all their guys, right? All the big players showed up. CONCACAF champions, big timers. Germany, all 11 of their starters. You go back to, you know, 3 years ago, 2014 World Cup final, which they won. They kicked Argentina's butts. All 11 who started in that game were not even called for the Confederations Cup, and they still whooped up Mexico. 4-1 the final score. So even the bench warmers on Germany are superior to the CONCACAF champions. These European teams, they can play with one hand tied behind their back, and they're still superior. I try to tell people, I'm not even a fan of Germany. I'm an Azzurri guy. Italia, Forza Italia. But you got to admit, the European brand of the game right now, it rules. Oh, man. The Real Madrid Cafe. That's like, and what was it? Was it a Messi theme park? I don't know if they're also, there's probably a Cristiano Ronaldo theme park somewhere in the world, but I think it's the Messi theme park is what they're opening in China. So between the, and you know, I know he's a Barcelona guy, but between the Lionel Messi theme park in China and now the Real Madrid Cafe opening up in downtown Miami, man, it's a tough, tough world we live in at this point. We'll talk more NBA, free agency about to heat up. Free agent circus getting started late Friday night, early Saturday morning, 12 midnight. Who better to break it down than Tom DeAngelo, covers the Miami Heat and the National Basketball Association for the Palm Beach Post. He's going to join us next here on Miami Sports Radio, 560 WQAM.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.